Hi, everybody. Welcome to the call. For those of you who are new to these calls, my name is Stephanie Gunning, and I am a freelance editor and co-writer and publishing consultant. Some of my clients are self-publishers. Some of them are small independent publishers, some are big publishing companies. One of my favorite things to do is to help new writers put together their book proposals and go out and figure out how to sell their books and build platforms and market them. And one of my clients is Kim Marcille, who has been working on a manuscript called Amp It Up, which is quite wonderful because we hear all about the laws of attraction and all this metaphysical stuff, but when you get right down to it, what we're talking about is quantum reality, which is scientific. So she's writing a book that really looks at what actual hardcore scientific research has to say about the way reality works and our connection to quantum energy and all of that. And so she's doing this fabulous project where she reveals the five secrets of science for having the life of your dreams. And I asked her if she would do a call for all of you guys because I deal with writers and speakers, and I believe that creative people have probably the best possibility of tapping into all of this. So I'm thrilled you're doing this call, Kim. So let me just talk a little bit about you. Kim Marcille is a motivational speaker, a corporate consultant, and a coach who focuses on strategic innovation. Her 25 years in business leadership ranges from Fortune 500 experience to small business ownership. Until recently, she was vice president of new initiatives for the Miami Herald Media Company, where she defined new possibilities with innovative technologies for a mature industry. Prior to taking that position, in 1989, Kim founded Catalyst, a consulting firm specializing in the implementation of cutting-edge publishing technologies and processes, and she served as president of that firm for 9 years. Her past clients have included Ogilvy & Mather, Eastern Airlines, Miami-Dade College, Harris Corporation, and the Coca-Cola Company, among other organizations. As an expert on navigating change and transitional innovation, Kim understands how to maximize the value we get from necessary transitions, whether these take place at the level of the individual, for example, career advancement, entrepreneurship, and self-empowerment, or at the level of the corporation, for example, strategic redirection, organizational restructuring, and new product development. Her first book, Amp It Up, which addresses these themes, is to be published in late 2007. Kim is a contributor to Managing Web Projects for Dummies, and she has written numerous articles and essays for magazines such as Ideas, Computer News International, the International Business Chronicle, and the Miami Herald. Kim is a member of the National Speakers Association, the Florida Speakers Association, and the Commonwealth Institute. She regularly speaks to audiences in various industries. I'm not going to read all of these groups. That's very impressive, but I don't want to take time away from this call. The main thing that she's known for is her ability to make technical information fun and engaging, and she has this marvelous ability to explain technical scientific information in layman's terms. She has served as a member of the local American Red Cross Board of Directors, and she has won awards for her speaking and marketing and communications awards, and I know that she was a mentor for the Newspaper Association of America's New Media Leadership Program, which specifically helped women and minorities advance people who are working in online media. And she divides her time between Miami, Florida, and Augusta, Georgia. So, wow, Kim, you have such an impressive background.
I'm so glad that's
I'm just
over.
In awe. So let me ask you a couple of questions, you know. I mean, first, like, for the listeners, what would you do if you knew that you had a proven scientific formula for success?
I'd
you
apply
woke
it.
Up every morning and you knew exactly the right steps to do to take your, you know, to send your productivity and your income soaring into the stratosphere. I want to know the answer to that. So, Kim, why should we look to science to solve our creative problems and manage our careers?
Well, first of all, let me say that I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me and for that very long introduction. That's a lot of stuff.
It is, but it's worth saying.
But I'm enjoying this this sort of journey through science. I am a sort of a techno geek, and I've always been very interested in cutting-edge discovery. And the main thing about science is that it's about how things work, right?
Yes.
So some of the latest scientific discoveries are teaching us more and more about how the universe gets things done and how we fit into that picture. And we can benefit by using some of the same methodologies that are already in play in the universe to amplify possibility, the stuff of our dreams, into reality.
So you're talking about quantum possibility, the quantum field, right?
I am, yeah.
So, I mean, my understanding of that concept is that it just is like a pervasive energy that's underlying everything, but so microscopic that it barely has a resemblance to what I experience on a daily basis. I mean,
that's right, and they're starting to find the link between quantum reality and the reality that we experience every day, and that's one of the discoveries that I talk about in the book.
So if quantum possibility is this idea that everything is energy and therefore it's an unlimited possibility, where do we start the process of getting what we want?
Well, what quantum science would tell you is that, first of all, no matter who you are, it's knowing what you want. You need to have a crystal clear vision of what it is that you want to create. And this goes back to the power of observation, which is a very powerful force at the quantum level, but also up here at the macro level. You know that that observation at this level can improve results. If you know somebody is leaning over your shoulder, you're going to try a little bit harder, for example. Self-observation is very powerful. Athletes use mental imagery to improve their performance. So having that vision, being able to see what you want, is very important. And you have to remember that you are the master creator. You are the designer of your dreams. And I can guarantee you that if you don't know what you want, the universe isn't going to have a clue either.
Okay, so I'm writing a book, which I actually am, one of many. And, you know, I don't really see the whole thing in my head yet.
Right.
I know it needs some rearrangement. I pretty much have a feeling of what I should do with it, but I'm kind of having trouble seeing all the way to the ending right now. So what should I do?
Well, in order to open up to the possibilities, you have to go into what I call wave mode. One of the unfortunate parts of being a human being is that we come with these blinders, unfortunately, which is that because of our past programming experiences that we've had, things that people have told us in the past, these blinders prevent us from seeing all of the possibility that's available to us. And I call this wave mode, which goes back to the quantum science and the dual nature of everything, which is that everything is made up of both particles and waves. And in the wave mode, all possibilities are available. And in the particle mode, only one possibility has been selected.
Okay, so let me see if I understand that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in wave mode, I'm sort of in that total sea of energy.
That's
it's
right.
like a light beam or something like that. Just
so you're
water,
surrounded,
it's pervasive.
You're surrounded by invisible possibility all the time. You're swimming in a sea of possibility. You are, in fact, made up of possibility. And so the question is, how do you access it?
So then when I'm in particle mode, I'm like solid, dense flesh and blood. It's done. It's finished. You know, I made a choice.
That's right.
Something like that.
And that's the way subatomic matter works.
So how do I get into the wave mode?
I think for us, accessing that possibility and opening to it is about asking the right questions. And in this case, the right kind of question would be for someone who's trying to write a book and get it published is, if I had already written the book and it was already published, what would that look like? What would my life be like if that had already happened? And what would I feel like in that time? What would everything be happening around me look like? And if you can picture the end game, the destination, and set that destination up, that future that you want to create, you will open yourself up to a lot of possibility. You'll begin to see things that you hadn't seen before. And there's a lot of tools in my book about how, about that whole opening up process.
So this is sort of like playful imagination time, daydreaming.
That's right. And but you need to, the vision is important. A daydream, if it's not concrete enough, I think, is going to get you a certain distance, but not all the way to the future of your dreams. So to really write it down and keep it close to you and modify it as you see new and better possibilities, I think, is important.
Do you think we should keep revisiting it and fine-tuning it and doing that on a daily basis? Or?
I do, and keep open to new possibilities that arise because you never know how the universe will deliver your vision to you. I have a great story about that, in fact. An author friend of mine named Joaquim de Posada, he's South American, and he wrote a book called Don't Eat the Marshmallow Yet. I think the subtitle is The Secret to Sweet Success in Work and Life.
Ah.
And this book was about a study that began in the 70s. It's a great study. It's a lot of fun. They took kindergartners, little kids, and they take them one at a time into a playroom, and they sit them at a little table and put a marshmallow in front of them. And they say, you know, my friend was supposed to get more marshmallows. There aren't enough marshmallows for everybody. There's just one left. So I'm going to go get the marshmallows, but don't eat this marshmallow. If you don't eat the marshmallow, I will bring you another marshmallow. You can have two marshmallows. But if you eat the marshmallow, you don't get any more. That's it. I'll be back in 15 minutes.
Okay, I would eat the marshmallow. I know I would.
Well, they filmed them with a hidden camera, and it was hysterical to watch what these kids did because they would go out of the room, and some of the kids would, like, pick up the marshmallow and lick it or smell it or draw little designs on the table around it with their finger, or they would take little tiny bites out of it. And, of course, some of them, as soon as the door closed, would pop the whole thing in their mouth, and it was gone. But the interesting part about the study was that they went back, like, 20 years later and looked at these kids again to see what kind of success they had created in their lives. And it turned out that the ones who were able to hold themselves back and delay their own gratification were much more successful on many measures than the kids who just had to eat the marshmallow right away.
Oh, no. I'm in trouble now. Okay, maybe I would just lick it.
I have to admit to being an instant gratification person myself. So what was interesting about the book that he wrote was that here in the United States, his study of what that meant and how to apply it in life was not a big deal. It sold about 10,000 copies. But in Korea, it became the number one selling book of all time.
Wow.
Bigger than Harry Potter. Bigger than the Da Vinci Code. And the reason why was because he had hit upon the key characteristic that Koreans attributed to their country's success, delayed gratification. So how could he ever have imagined that that success would have come to him, that his vision, which was, of course, to sell a lot of books, would have come true by becoming the number one bestseller in Korea? So I love that story because, you know, we sometimes focus too much on the hows and not on where we want to end up. And the universe got all kinds of ways to deliver stuff to us if we let the reins go and let the universe figure it out.
So what I take from that is that he set a really clear vision of his destination,
right?
Sell a lot of books.
Right.
He obviously was able to complete the task of writing the book.
He did.
So he must have been able to visualize each step in that process or he couldn't have done it. And then... At the end, the quantum reality rewarded him in a way he couldn't have pinned down. If I said to anybody on this call, become a bestseller in South Korea, we would have no clue what to do, or
That's
North
right.
Korea, or anything, because because we can't actually really imagine that. I mean, if I said you become a bestseller in the United States, also equally hard, you know.
That's right.
It's equally hard to be that specific about, you know. But that's what that's what a lot of people spend their time trying to learn how to do. So,
well, I think that the important thing about this vision setting process is that you're deciding what the end game is, and however you get there, well, all you can do, as my friend Mike Dooley says, is you got to do what you can with what you've got from where you are, and you work towards your goal. There's no question about it. You pick a path and you go on that path, but be open to the other paths that are out there. And by creating and recording the vision, you're actually defining what it is that you want to create and amplify into reality.
So explain to me a little bit more about amplification. I mean, I know about like rock and roll instruments. You can have an acoustic guitar, you put an amplifier on it, the sound is louder.
Right.
So what is it? You've said this many times to me, that human beings are the best designed amplification machines in the world. What does
right.
that mean? Why is that true?
I like to call people possibility amplifiers. I think one of my missions is to reveal the hidden possibility amplifier in each of us. Because we each have a brain, an incredibly complex and sophisticated instrument that's designed actually to amplify possibility into reality. And I go into this quite extensively in the book, talk about how the brain is a chaotic, iterative system, which is probably too much science for this call.
Iterative meaning?
Feedback loops.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes back, the information in your brain goes around and around in feedback checking loops, basically.
So you say, this is true, and then you go, or is it?
Is it? Right. And it checks it against a whole bunch of variables.
Yes,
right.
No. Okay.
Right. Sounds a lot like my thought process most of the time.
Right.
So, but the point is that at some point, most things were concepts. If you were to look around the room you're in, for example, the room you're sitting in right now, everything in that room was at one point just a possibility in somebody's head.
Sure,
a
table,
a
computer, a chair. Right.
Exactly. And so, but now it's real. I don't think any of us could argue with that. And this has been true throughout history on a whole variety of levels. I mean, huge possibilities. For example, there was a time in history when people thought that it was impossible for a human being to run a mile in faster than 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one person who didn't think that was true, and that was Roger Bannister. And he combined a very rigorous training schedule and his medical knowledge as a doctor, went out onto a track, and in one day, with one race, he changed the minds of the entire species.
Right, and now everybody, well, everybody is stretching it, but a lot of people have done that.
And the barrier was broken, and what was so interesting about it to me was that once he broke the barrier and ran a mile in less than 4 minutes, all of a sudden people around the world started running the mile in less than 4 minutes. They were just waiting for somebody to say, this is a real possibility.
You know, that's so funny because inventions are often invented in more than one place around the world at the same time.
That's right. Don't you haven't you ever had that experience where you thought you coined a phrase and then you heard it from somewhere else?
Right.
Yeah, I think there's this sort of connectedness about all of that.
It must be sort of like that possibility sort of rising to the surface, you
it
know.
It seems like it,
to
yeah.
get the conditions in place for the thing to happen, you know.
There's a lot of human energy on this planet, I sometimes think that we are all connected by that energy.
Yeah.
So another example of that would be that everyone is familiar with is the Wright brothers. Everybody up until that point was saying it's impossible for us to fly. We weren't meant to fly. And, of course, with one flight in Kitty Hawk, they, again, changed the minds of an entire planet. So the main point for this group listening today is that you and they have the same possibility amplification powers that all of these historical figures do. Everybody has this capability. The question is just how to learn how to master it, to access it and master it. And there are a few ways that you can do that. And one of the ways that you can amplify, so I use amplification to get back to your original question in a couple different ways. One is amplifying possibility into reality, which is what quantum physicists call it. when quantum possibilities amplified into reality appear in our three-dimensional world. And the second use of the word is just to make it bigger and juicier and more vivid. It's kind of like going to 11 on a dial that goes to 10, if you ever saw the movie Spinal Tap, right? And so that's what we also want to do, because we tend to, when we create visions of the future, create visions that look a lot like our present, because we don't go out there and get into that wave mode and really try to expand our visioning capability. And visioning capability is really important. I just read a study from the 1980s, which was surprising, I hadn't heard of it before, that demonstrated that people who were able to imagine things more vividly with more senses were wealthier.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely see when I'm working with clients that often the confidence sort of grows. Like a woman said to me the other day, well, I'm not a real writer.
Mm-hmm.
But she's writing a book. I'm watching her do it.
And I
was like, no, that's really interesting, because I've seen this done sufficient number of times now that I actually am 100% sure that any human being can write a book.
That's right.
I have no doubt of it. It may take different degrees of learning and, you know, assistance and all of that, but I know that's true.
Well, if I can do it, anybody can do it. I'm sure of that.
And Kim, you can easily. I mean, please, look at the way you write. You write so beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And you're helping me with that, which is
absolutely
great.
Absolutely, but I mean, hasn't your confidence just amplified?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It really has through this process of working with you. There's no question.
Yeah. So what else can we do to support ourselves?
Okay, so let's just talk a little bit more about amplifying up this vision. One of the ways you can make the vision more powerful is by emotionalizing it, which we talked about. And you can, what I like to say is that if you know that you want to feel a certain way about this project, let's say you've written this book and it's published and you're holding it in your hand, and you're handing it out to your friends, and maybe you're imagining yourself at a book signing, or you're standing at a podium giving a talk about the book. These imaginings, you know, if you feel the feelings that come with doing those things, the pride, the confidence, the sense of accomplishment, it makes the vision so much more powerful and compelling to you, and it pulls you toward it when you can make it that powerful. So the emotions are very important. And also I would say, if you want to feel that way in your future after you've done this project, start practicing those emotions now.
Right.
If you want to feel happy, practice being happy. If you want to feel confident, practice feeling confident. And eventually you begin to morph into this person who's already done this thing. So that would be my second piece of advice on that would be to wear your vision like a skin. It should be as close to you as if it were your own skin. And
so we can sort of move in that direction, and by the time we're there, we're there.
You know, if you were today to pretend to be already a published author, how would you act? How would you talk? How would you carry yourself in the world? Cary Grant was born as a guy named Archibald Leach in Britain, and he once said that he pretended to be Cary Grant until he actually became him. And that, I think, is a great lesson for us, in that if we desire to be a person who's accomplished these things in our vision, that we can start doing that today. We don't have to wait in order to have that experience.
Yeah, and that's a great example. So another thing that your third secret of science, let's say, is about the nature of decoherence, which my understanding is that this is about putting information out into the environment. Is that right?
That's right. Decoherence is a really hot part of quantum physics right now, and they've actually proven it now to exist in the lab. And decoherence is the link between what happens at the quantum level of the universe, that physics, and the physics of our everyday reality. Because if you know much about quantum physics, you'll know that down at the subatomic level of the universe, all kinds of wacky things happen. Like if you were a subatomic being, you would be able to walk through walls and transport port to Mexico to have a margarita and back
instantaneously.
You know, yeah, and be a little tiny margarita, but
I'd come down there and have
them there
too.
You go, have a mojito down in Miami with me. And you would be able to transport information across the universe at the speed of light and that sort of stuff, which doesn't happen up here in our everyday lives. So they've been trying to explain how one turns into the other, since everything up here is made of everything down there. And so decoherence, they now think, is the answer to that question. And so the way it works is that when this quantum stuff comes into contact with the environment amplifies the most powerful possibilities that the quantum soup offers up. And the way that a possibility becomes powerful is that there's lots of information created about it in the environment. So as we were talking about earlier, everything is made up mainly of energy and space, but overlying that is information, and the information tells how that energy and space will be organized. And so this information about those possibilities makes them powerful if there's enough of it. It makes those possibilities robust and stable. So if we were to take that principle and apply it in our lives, we would want to create a lot of information in the environment about our possibilities so that the environment would amplify the ones we want to amplify rather than some other possibility that doesn't have much meaning to us.
Okay, wait, let me just make sure I heard you correctly.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that so everything is possible, that's sort of the quantum potential,
right,
the infinite level.
Right.
And then we create a vision, and as we start attaching emotions to our vision and whatever, our consciousness is sort of creating a more tangible reality. It's amplifying this vision that we have. But to really get it to sort of kick up a notch, to amp it up, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
to borrow your phrase,
mm-hmm.
What we need to do is we need to start interacting with the environment and bringing the environment along into our vision.
That's right.
And we do that by putting conscious, something out. What does it have to be? Actions? Is it thoughts? What can we put out that's going to make the environment start aligning with our vision?
There's actually a whole bunch of different kinds of informational records that you can create, and so we'll just go through a couple of those.
Okay.
First of all, there are oral records, and these are the spoken records about your possibility. So if you can imagine yourself kind of like pulling your possibility up out of the ether and bringing it to life in the environment, this is what placing these informational records is all about. So you have the spoken records. So you tell everybody that you're writing a book. I can't tell you what that's doing for me right now, because I've told everybody I'm writing a book, and now everywhere I go, everyone I see says, "Hey, Kim, how's the book going?"
Right.
And then I go, "Geez, I better get back to my desk and write another chapter tonight," you know? "It's going great," is what I always say, because I'm going to bolster my own.
Which is true.
Well, thank you. I feel like I'm making great progress.
Yeah.
So those oral records are great because they come back to you and reinforce your own vision.
Yeah.
But also, when you tell somebody, guess what? They'll tell two friends and so on, just like that old Fabergé shampoo commercial, if you remember that.
Right.
And now you've got a whole bunch of more records about your vision coming to life in this world that you didn't have to plant yourself. So
right.
It saves you time and energy, oral records.
Right.
So tell everybody. Tell your mother, tell your lawyer, tell your boss. Tell your kids, tell everybody.
Right. And then somebody just comes up to you and goes, "Oh, my God, I know the perfect editor, the perfect agent, the perfect publisher," et cetera.
True. Once you've activated your network all of a sudden it begins to work for you, and those possibilities, those opportunities to support your possibility arise. Another form of these informational records is written records. So you can create written records by writing a plan about what you're going to do, or writing down that vision, as we were talking about before. You can journal about it. I'll tell you that I have one of my very good friends won the Massachusetts State Lottery, $1.2 million. And her last journal entry the day before she won was, "It's starting to happen. I can feel it."
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
She'd drawn pictures of herself standing in front of a wall covered with pictures about, with her hands full of cash. The wall was covered with pictures of what she was going to do with the money when she got it. Now, that's a powerful written record.
Now, that's really interesting because, to me, that sounds very metaphysical, very spiritual. And so I kind of go, is science and metaphysics the same thing? But when you say write a plan, I also think book proposal.
Right.
I mean, it's the most obvious grounded. If you want a loan from the bank or a grant from a foundation, you write a little proposal and they say yes or they say no. When you want to sell a book to a publisher so that they help you publish, manufacture and distribute and publish it, you write a book proposal.
Right.
And that's what I teach people how to do. And, in fact, I'll say to people, this is 50% of the whole process because you're creating a blueprint. And even though you might write one or two sample chapters before you sell it to a publisher, but once you do sell it to a publisher, all you have to do is follow the guidelines you've already set for yourself. And that's easy because now you have a publisher, you're even more motivated.
You know, I don't think I'm very happy that I worked with you and I followed your process because I can't imagine what a mess my book would have been if I hadn't done the proposal first. It crystallized my thinking so much about what I needed to put in the chapters. Who was I actually talking to? You know, what was I trying to accomplish for them and so on. So I agree. I think that that's a great written record that you can create.
And I love that thing about making a dream board, too. Please do not think
right.
I'm dissing that. I have one on my wall.
Well, and you know what? I think a lot of what's happening in science is that science and spirituality are kind of coming together. You know, people keep saying, is science going to find God? And who knows? Maybe eventually we will.
Yeah.
Not me personally.
So a lot of people I know, you know, will sort of mock up the cover of their book.
Right.
And some other people will take, you know, the title and they'll Xerox the New York Times bestseller list and then they'll put their own title at number one and put like 32 weeks.
Right.
Or 160 weeks or whatever.
That's right. And those would be sort of like the action records where you do design the cover of your book or you join a class or a coaching program or you do some research and you start taking the actions that say this book is actually going to come to fruition.
Right.
And last, I would say that you can use thought records, and that would be, again, spending some time visualizing that end state. You've already got it done. What does that look like? What does that feel like?
Okay, so you've been sort of describing the perfect scenario, like the happy scenario. I'm writing a book. Everything is great. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I'd lightly go on, and all of a sudden, I'm a best-selling author in South Korea.
Yay!
But sometimes when you tell people that you're writing a book, they start doubting, oh, how do you have time for that? Oh, you're not educated enough, blah, blah, blah. Or your own feelings. Like you said the phrase, stand up, give a speech about it at a podium. Maybe I'm scared of public speaking or something. What do I do with the negativity?
Well, that little voice inside your head that everybody has, the main thing about that voice is that there's always going to be a voice. There's always going to be resistance in this, any creative process. There's always going to be resistance. But without resistance, we wouldn't know what overcoming it feels like. So there wouldn't be all that wonderful sense of accomplishment if we hadn't had to work at it in the first place. So there'll always be this voice, thank God for the voice, so that we can overcome adversity and feel really good about what we've accomplished. But in order for us to overcome the voice, we need to build a belief reinforcement system.
Now, is that really a real scientific principle?
It is, and it's based on epigenetics. This part of my book is based on a concept called epigenetics, and this is a science that's been around for a while but has recently taken a new twist. Back in November, December of last year, it was on the front of every single science magazine out there.
Wow.
And epi means above. So this means above genetics. That basically, there are things that you can do in your own internal environment that can overcome even your DNA. And the experiment that was being talked about at the end of last year was a case where they had figured out that by changing the diet of a mother mouse, they could turn off a gene mutation in the baby she was carrying, the baby mouse she was carrying, and the baby would be born normal. And so this was the first time that this had been so specifically proven. So when you start thinking about the internal environment that you're creating for yourself, there's a lot of stuff that we're pouring into our own bodies. And a lot of people fall down in this area because they don't realize that they have a belief system that needs to be managed. They spend all their time working the vision and not aligning their belief system with their vision. So they're at odds, which just puts drag on their whole creative process.
You know, I see that a lot. I always describe it as having one foot on the gas and one foot on the brake.
Right.
And it's, you sort of go,
you get a follow
visual
those drivers,
of that jerking car motion.
Right. And so it does create friction in your process. And so you have to know that the body has basically two states. One is a growth state when it's building things, you know. When you're very, very healthy and in this growth state, things like babies get born and all kinds of stuff.
Right, and books get written.
When the body is in a conserving state or survival state, and you've probably heard this expressed as fight or flight, then the body kind of is shutting itself down, and it's not expending any energy in a creation process. So it's going to be very hard for you to create when your body is in that state. And we get into that state in these times because we're usually very stressed out. We're overwhelmed and so on. And stress comes with a collection of chemicals that are released inside our bodies. So when we're stressed, we're literally bathing ourselves in a stress bath. And when the body is in this state again, you'll find it really hard to create.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I've heard that it can take like a week or something if you have a shock. Like, let's say somebody scares you and your adrenaline pumps, that it can take like a week for those chemicals to leave your body.
Yeah, they hang around for a really long time. And, you know, your cells are all just basically receptors waiting to get whatever is being sent to them. And it's your brain that's deciding what chemical baths they're going to be sitting in. So aligning your beliefs with your vision in order to reduce the friction between the two. You know, you feel like you should be doing this, but you don't feel like you can.
Mm-hmm.
That's just going to set up an environment that's
right.
not going to support that process. So by pumping the right chemicals into your body, by managing this belief system and paying attention to it and caring for it, will create that growth mode or help to create that growth mode that will support your creation process.
So you're saying, like, teach myself to speak nice to myself.
It is about nurturing. It ends up being about nurturing. We sometimes treat ourselves worse than we would treat an absolute stranger. We are really not very good to ourselves at times. And when we are beating ourselves up, we are not supporting the process of creation at that moment.
So that's really interesting because you also said it was like when they gave the mother mouse good, different nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people who like stay up late watching TV because they're tired and so they kind of don't go to sleep, you know, this is a strange one, but I've observed in my own work process that when I'm on an intense deadline or I really want to get stuff done, if I can literally feed myself more nutritiously, get a little bit of exercise, take some quiet time, I meditate regularly, and get more sleep, all of a sudden my brain fog kind of lifts, you know, and I actually get excited because when I treat myself well, I'm happy.
It's amazing how that works, isn't it?
I know, but I'm almost like proud of myself, you know?
Yeah, doing it makes you feel good and the feelings about doing it make you feel good. So.
Yeah, it's like the angels are aligned with me or something.
Well, right, and you get into these real flow states. Like you said, staying up late to finish this project, if you are in the flow, there's no way you're going to go to bed. And when you're in the flow, I think you're doing very good things for your body.
Well, then I'm not fatigued. That's different. Like staying up late when I'm inspired is cool, you know, unless my neck starts to hurt or my hand or something.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. So this belief system is, it's almost like when you get into a relationship with somebody. There are three entities in that relationship. There's you, the other person, and the relationship. It's that overlying mechanism or system that needs to be cared for and paid attention to as a thing in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the belief system is like that as well. And so I have in my book a bunch of tools to use to nurture this belief system. Some people would meditate. Some people find meditation like offensive. They can't possibly figure out how they're going to sit down and go into a Zen state.
Well, then you need to get a book like by Herbert Benson and just call it something else. Call it relaxation.
Yeah, right.
If words freak you out, then choose a different word.
Right. Or journaling, like getting up in the morning and writing a little bit. And it doesn't have to take a long time. It could be just sitting in a chair for 5 minutes and closing your eyes and remembering where you're headed and that you have and believing in your capability to get there. So it is a little bit of a mantra process, but it doesn't have to take a lot of time.
Right. So that's four of the five secrets that you were going to tell us. So my favorite is actually the last one, and it's really because it uses a rare letter. I'll admit that. It's a good principle, but I'm also just into the letter Z. So what's the fifth principle?
The fifth principle is called the inverse Zeno effect. The Zeno effect was discovered by a quantum physicist. Again, we're spending a lot of time in the quantum today. That they discovered that while they were watching subatomic activity and measuring it, that the way they measured it could either slow it down or speed it up.
Mm.
So if a quantum system was in the process of evolution, like an atom decaying, for example, by measuring it in a certain way, with a certain frequency, they could actually stop it from decaying. But by the same token, if they move to a different part of the process and with a different kind of frequency, they could actually cause the decay to happen faster.
So why is it called inverse?
The inverse, the Zeno effect, is the slowing down.
Okay.
And the inverse is speeding up. So naturally, in the process of writing a book, we want to accelerate that process, or the creation of any vision that we have, we want to accelerate the process. So this is about the inverse Zeno effect.
So you're saying that I can accelerate or speed up my process by measuring myself correctly.
That's right. So let me give you an example of how we typically measure ourselves. Have you ever said something like, "Oh, I can't believe I did that"?
Yes.
Oh, geez, why did I say that? So we have this tendency to measure ourselves in the wrong places. We notice our mistakes way more than we notice our successes. And by doing that, again, we create drag on that creation process that we're working on. So what we need to do is look for the places where we can measure ourselves in ways that will bolster us. So let's say that you've gone through a whole day and you had at the top of your list your number one thing to do, and you didn't touch it all day. And now it's I'm sure that's
right.
Happened to you.
Finish
I know
chapter
it's happened to me.
Three, right.
Yeah, right, exactly. So you haven't touched chapter three, and now you're at the end of the day, and you have to go on and get dinner for your family or whatever it is. What do you do? Now,
I sharpened a pencil.
Great success, right? You sometimes have to look for the little things. And so I think it's okay to measure even the little things that were successful in that day. But if you get to the end of the day and you're really not feeling good about it, do just one thing. So if you know you can send an email and say, "Stephanie, I need to meet with you about chapter three tomorrow. Help me," you know, send that one email. If you need to make a phone call, if it is just blocking your calendar for 2 hours right first thing in the morning the next day so that you can finish chapter three, do that, but take one step towards your vision and then measure yourself. I made a commitment. I'm going to get this thing done, rather than beating yourself over the head about it. And I have a tool that I use. It's called the Inverse Zeno Report, the IZR. And I've been using this pretty regularly myself lately. And I use it to measure not just my project process or progress, but but also how I did in general as a human being today. Because I figure the more stuff I can throw in this bucket, the more confident I'm going to feel. And when I'm in that growth phase, you know, that growth state, I'm going to be able to get to my vision a lot easier.
Because it's a lot more high energy and flowing.
That's
right. I'm totally with you.
And so what I do is I have an email message to, I send this one to my boyfriend, who is very supportive of me in this process. I just put in the subject IZR. And then I start, throughout the day, I just kind of throw a line in there and say, I did this, I did that, I did that, I got this done, I got this done, I got this done. And at the end of the day, I send it to him, and he supports me by writing back something like, honey, you're a genius.
I love it.
And it's great. I'm thinking
that's
about
great.
Putting together a little acceleration journal that you could carry in your purse or your pocket around with you so that you could jot those things down. Because I think if you get them collected into one place and you get a little booklet or something that you can leaf through and look and see how much you've done, you'd just be amazed at yourself. Just absolutely amazed. So I think
you're right, because we don't really give ourselves credit for what we do.
We don't.
And to get a big task done, you do have to prepare. You need your supplies. You need help. You might need to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking things through sometimes is the step.
That's right.
You know, go to the library, get the right book.
Something like writing a book is a process, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to get it all done in one day. So, but in every day you can make a little bit of progress and get a little bit closer to your goal. And so those little things may not feel like very much to you, but in actuality they are.
So this is very cool. So let's just review for a second, and then you can explain your special offer and we can take some questions.
Okay.
So the first thing that we need to know is that we're in a sea of quantum possibility, and we can go into this wave mode. That's where new possibilities are open to us. Is that correct?
That's correct. You can't spend all day there. You eventually have to make choices and decisions and move on.
Right.
But yes.
And then, so once we decide what our vision is, what our destination is, by holding this vision, our brains will amplify it.
That's right.
And we do that because we are, oh, I feel so bright, chaotic iterative systems. We get feedback.
That's right. And we are the best possibility amplifiers in the universe.
And that's because that's literally how the human brain works.
That's right. It's designed to amplify possibility.
So that's just our nature. We don't have to fight that.
No, in fact, everybody has the capability. Just got to use it.
Yeah, so we can learn how to use that better. It's like a muscle. You
that's
just practice, right?
Exactly.
And then the third one is, I forget it. It was... quantum possibility amplification.
The third one is epigenetics.
Decoherence. No, it was
decoherence. Sorry, you're right.
So, because it was the positive stuff, like putting a lot of positive information that's all on the same theme, writing the book, writing the chapter, getting the speaking engagement, or let's say you've accomplished chapter one, now it's chapter two, or you've written the first draft of the book, and now it's finding a literary agent. Whatever that step is, you just keep putting that thing out and into the environment, and the environment supports you more and more, right?
Right.
And it brings you your strongest possibility.
Create strong possibilities.
So if we're waffling between two things, we may stick ourselves.
That's right, because in quantum physics they call that entanglement. Like if somebody's telling you you'll never get this book written and you decide to go along with them mentally, you've just really put a dent in the strength of your possibility. Entangled states do not get amplified.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then, so then number four is sort of dealing with the negative voices or the negative conditions, let's say, because it could be something else. It could be, before you can write a book, you have to learn how to read. But, I mean, it could be, right? So,
sure.
So for that person who wants to communicate a message and write a book, they have something to overcome. So the epigenetics is the overcoming device.
The biology of belief, correct.
Using our belief systems to overcome
Negative forces, whether they're inside our head or outside our head.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then the final one is the inverse Zeno effect. We can speed up by measuring progress and totally ignoring failure.
I don't know that you can totally ignore it, but I know that we could spend a little bit more time acknowledging and measuring the things that are in our favor, that are in the positive bucket.
Yeah. So what I did not say at the beginning of the call, which I fully intended to, was I did not give people your website address, which I really think that they should have. And I know that you have a newsletter that you send out?
I do. It's called Possibility Tips, and I send it out about once a week, and it just gives you a reminder of how to access and amplify possibility.
So that's available on your website, which is kimmarcile.com, which is spelled kimmarcille.com, right?
Correct.
Dub, dub, dub. I forgot that.
www.kimmarcille.com.
And there's a sign-up box right there, right?
Right on the homepage, exactly. And when you do sign up for the newsletter, first of all, you get a half an hour audio of me being interviewed about inspiration. But also I'm designing right now an 8-week course on possibility amplification, an email course, and I'm going to be offering the first 25 people from my list who sign up for that email access to me throughout the course, because I'm testing some new material and I want to get some good feedback and work with the folks that are signing up. So that will be an opportunity that you'll get from signing up. And also I'm releasing very soon an audio program called Amp Up Your Business, which takes these same principles combined with my 25 years of business experience and shows you how to apply them to create whatever business outcomes you want. And they'll be offering folks a pre-release discount to that as well if they're on my list when I
Well, you know, if you send me those details overnight, I was going to send people a follow-up email tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
and I can include the special offer in the email.
Oh, sure.
You know, so those details will come to people who registered for
That'd
this call.
Be great.
And I'm going to also offer a pre-publication discount I've been giving a telecourse for the past month called 7 Quick and Easy Steps to Write and Sell Your First Book Proposal. And it has a lot of audios and some companion workbooks and so forth. And I'm going to launch it just as a downloadable audio product and digital product on August 1st. But I was going to give people who registered for this call a special pre-release discount of $50 off, which is pretty good, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll come around in that email as well, how to make that happen.
It's a real deal.
I'll
tell you what, I paid a lot more for Stephanie's services, and the price she's putting on that thing is just unbelievable. I would jump on it.
Thank you, Kim. That's
well
great.
Worth it.
Before we might be able to go over a little bit here, but I just want to make sure that if people have any questions about this, because you've given so much great detail, mm-hmm. that people get a chance to ask. So let's take two or three questions. Here we go. I'm going to unmute. So if anybody has a question, just say your name and ask your question.
This is where I sing the Jeopardy song.
Yeah, sing the Jeopardy song.
Do, 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 do.
Hi, this is Pam.
Hey, Pam.
Hey. I guess one question I would have is, let's say you don't have clarity about something, like about a writing project, but it could be anything in your life that you just don't have clarity about yet, and you have that kind of foggy feeling about it. So you don't even know, you don't have a clear vision yet.
Mm-hmm.
What are some steps that can help you open up to exploring the vision, you know, especially if you feel really stuck? What, you know, I know you mentioned, you know, sort of having the emotional attachment or experience with a vision, but what if you don't even know what that is yet? You don't even know which direction to go in.
Well, if you are considering a couple different directions, and I think one of the things I notice a lot is that people do tend to be fuzzy about their futures. It's just sort of our nature. If we stay fuzzy if we don't have to commit. but if you, one of my favorite techniques for figuring out which path to take is looking at one particular kind of possibility. So you're in a situation and it could go almost any way. And one of the possibilities that we don't want to look at out of all the possibilities that are out there is the worst one, the worst possible outcome. And so I like to recommend looking at the worst possible outcome that could happen from taking any particular path and cataloging it. And then when you start cataloging it, all of a sudden things start to occur to you about, well, if this happened, then I would do this and I would do that. And all of a sudden you've opened up this whole realm of possibility that you were also blocking off by blocking off the worst possible outcome. So that's one of my favorites because it can be very powerful. If I took this job or if I married this guy or if I wrote the book this way, what would be the worst possible thing that could happen? And then by looking at that, you can, as I say, open up a whole bunch of other possibilities.
You know, that's actually really interesting in terms of writing a book,
mm-hmm.
because a place that a lot of people get stuck, including me, is on the outline.
Mm-hmm.
And so giving yourself permission to do more than one outline.
Lord knows I did.
Yeah. And you know what? The outline you ended up with is probably not that far off from the one you started with. I just made you take a harder look at it.
Well, it's based on the same principles, but a totally different book and a much better book than it was
right.
in the beginning, yeah.
Right. I agree it's better. It's stronger. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so that's one way. Other ways that you can open up possibility are, I had my head full of them just a second ago. Let me see if I can pull them back out of the ether. Is to look at what other people are doing. So in a business sense, for example, I would say go look at other industries and see what they're applying and see if you can take some of what they're doing in their methodologies and apply to yours. Get an advisor, a person who is an expert at what you're trying to do, and brainstorm with them. So getting outside of yourself is very helpful. I even recommend physical risk. Taking a physical risk that gets you a little bit outside your comfort zone, and Stephanie knows that I like to do this sort of thing. Like I went and raced a NASCAR and did about 135 miles per hour on the Homestead Speedway racetrack. And a stock car, you know, and it was...
And how was your writing the day after that?
Well, it was amped up, I'll tell you that right now. It opened my eyes to a whole bunch of stuff because I think you when you do that sort of stuff, you get this focused concentration that escapes us so much of the time because our heads are so full of stuff. And so when you get focused like that, physical risk helps you focus, learn how to get yourself focused, and so... That's another one of my favorite things, so maybe go jump out of a plane or something.
You know what, you could even do, I mean, I understand the whole adrenaline thing and the folk, like I've noticed that when, you know, somebody dies, for instance, that you care about, suddenly all the things that don't matter drop away. And you
right.
get, like there are maybe two or three things that are like a high priority, but just changing the way you do ordinary activities, walking a different way home, doing one new thing, going to a different kind of event than you normally do, going alone to a restaurant instead of going with company, or just trying something new. Even those little surprises shock the brain out of complacency. And they even say that one of the reasons that people often fall in love on dates is because they go out to someplace they don't normally go. And so there's a little bit of fear that enters in when you're in an unfamiliar place. Your mind goes on heightened alert. And so anybody you connect to in that place, you're going to love a little bit more. Isn't that weird?
But it is great.
That's why men should take women to really cool places.
There you go.
I don't know what that has to do with writing, but, oh, yeah, that's right, doing it differently.
That's right. So a great way to open up the possibility. Does that answer your question, Pam?
Yeah, that's really helpful. That gives me lots of good ideas, and maybe I'll start dating my parachute instructor.
And then you can write a book about it. Does anybody else have a question? I think we have time for one more.
Yeah, this is Emil from New Jersey. It's funny you mentioned that. I'm on the side. I'm a motorcycle instructor, and it's hard for people to understand, but the best way I could explain it is that riding does focus you to the point where you do have to forget about everything else, if only to preserve your own life, and it actually feels like a form of meditation.
That's what I was going to say.
Everything else goes away.
Mm-hmm. And it is, and running is like that for me too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My question is, I had an extraordinary creative moment. I was thinking about an idea for a children's book, and it was very vague, and I had the main character, and I didn't know what I wanted him to do. And I just was, it was kind of percolating on the back burner. And all of a sudden, during lunch, everything came to me. And it was almost as if the book was being written in my head and I was reading it at the same time. So I work with my wife, and I ran downstairs, and I just started spewing it out as quickly as I could, because it was just unstoppable. It was like this torrent of information. And I was exhausted after about 15 or 20 minutes of just getting this out and kind of riding this wave. And I was extremely happy. I was over the moon because there was just so much there to work with. And sure enough, those notes got lost.
Oh.
So,
ouch.
Yeah, yeah. And it was pretty much written as it was in those notes. And I'm trying now to recreate it, and I'm coming up with some ideas, but it doesn't have the richness and the depth that it did that day. And I'm trying to figure out, from what you've said, what techniques or what things I try to kind of get that back.
What were you doing when this happened to you?
I was just getting lunch. I was in the kitchen. We work at home, and I was making lunch. All of a sudden, it's almost like you turn on the TV, and you hear that signal, and the picture hasn't appeared yet.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was my brain. There was a signal coming, and the picture hadn't appeared yet, something was going on, and then all of a sudden, it's like the picture was there, and all the information just came flooding in. I was like, okay, this is the character's name, and these are his attributes, and there's going to be this land of wherever he's going to go, and, you know, these are going to be the conflicts. And I saw all these connections to themes that are going on in our world currently, that, you know, part of it spoke to, you know, a child's world, but part of it also spoke to an adult.
Sounds like you really tapped into something there.
Yeah,
I'll tell
you know
what.
I'm curious to know if anything from these scientific secrets can apply to that.
Well, you know, I would wonder what he was doing right before then, because I know I've had that experience myself, and it was something I worked up to it over a period of time in a morning. And the other thing I would say is hang out with a group of kids and tell them about the character, whatever you can remember, and then try to tell them the story and see if just having the experience of being with the kids could elicit some more of what you've forgotten, and see if you can tap back into that again.
That's sort of like the decoherence principle.
Right. You know, take some action. Go hang out with some children mentors.
Right.
And see if they can guide you back to your source.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, my feeling, you know, as a creative person, we actually need to end this call, but is that if we try to recreate the experience exactly that we had, we can really mess ourselves up.
Right.
Like, that was a wonderful day and a wonderful experience of flow and creativity.
Right.
On some level, that material exists or maybe when you get back to it, it will be even richer and more wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like to say, this was the one day in my life that was golden, and every other day is never going to live up to that. It's like, boy, you know, that's not a future I want to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And as a techno geek, my other contribution would be back up.
Yes.
And I'm thinking hypnosis. Like, I'm just, you know.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Somebody can, like, get you to go back in and see it visually or something.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
but how interesting.
Thanks for the question.
Yeah, great question. So I just want to say thanks again, Kim.
My pleasure.
This recording is going to be available on my website, stephaniegunning.com. I post most everything that I record and most of the articles that I write and circulate them from time to time, so they're always changing. So thanks to everybody for being on this call, and I'll talk to you soon.
Wishing you every possibility.
Okay.
Okay, bye. Good night.
Bye.